Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is here.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact same
thing. I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
A Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk. This is Tech Talk. Good morning. This is Michael Tech Talk Kassler joining you today. Beautiful Saturday morning here in Northern Illinois. Sadly, all by myself again today. Dave is off with, as I like to refer to her, Yoko. They're enjoying Canada, I believe, at the moment, and all that good stuff. So, but that's okay. You know what? I'm not going to be completely solo. So those of you that were just about to flip the dial off, our good friend Jay Garman is going to be in, or at least virtually on with us. He's going to be answering some questions about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And we also, too, you can find us online at any time, techtalk.wrlr.fm. You can watch us live right now, and by watch I actually mean watch. You can watch us live if you'd want to for any crazy reason at justin.tv/wrlr. actually, there is good reason. We've got some great people on right now that are chatting and stuff, and I'll try to respond if my fingers can fly fast enough away from the tap here. Someone mentioned online, I believe our good friend Adrian, saying she thought I was going to Vegas, and it's true. I am going to Vegas, but I'm not leaving until tomorrow. I just got back actually from the East Coast. Met up with some great guys out there, had a great trip, and then suddenly now I'm leaving tomorrow morning for Las Vegas. I'm going to have a week out there, so fun stuff. I wish I could say there was some highly technical reason that I was going there and I was going to come back with all sorts of wonderful new technology news, views, interviews, and info, like when I make my trips to the West Coast, San Francisco, for the Oracle conferences and things like this. But sadly, no, at least sadly for listeners, no. This is all about me. I'm just going for me. Gonna have some fun, gonna relax a little bit, all that good stuff. But I'll be back next week. And in fact, next week, we're gonna have a great guest on. I'm looking forward to this. I'm gonna try and pull up his name here so that I can let you know exactly who it is, so I don't get the name wrong. We're gonna have next worth's Robert Wesley on. And he's gonna come on and talk to us. Now, I found this fascinating an idea. Everybody's got just tons and tons of extra computer equipment, smartphones, stuff that's collecting dust maybe and all this. And you're thinking, you know, Best Buy's now is selling this deal where you can, kind of reserve the fact that you'd be able to trade in your equipment. At the same time, the Verizon and AT&T and other companies are pulling back their trade-in deals. Well, NextWorth is stepping in to fill that gap, and they're going to tell you what your trade-ins may be worth. They may be telling you, Wesley is going to tell us how you can turn some of that old equipment into cash in order to buy up, of course, the next cool thing that's coming along. So I'm really excited about that. That's going to be a lot of fun, and hopefully you are too. You'll stay around with us next week when we do talk to him. This week, though, we just got a lot of really cool news and information to talk about. Like I said, we're going to have Jay Garman on in just a little bit, and then we'll finish off the day, as always, with some great cool sights of the week, and then the podcast-only song of the week as well that you will not want to miss either of those things. Really, really good stuff. So stay tuned here. Big news, of course. It's tough to turn anywhere, look anywhere, see anything without finding information about Japan and about what's happening in Japan, about the terrible tragedy and devastation that has occurred there. And our hearts and prayers go out for them, and in many cases our dollars go out to them as well, as we try to be generous and assist those that are in need. And this happens, it seems with increasing frequency lately that we've had natural disasters and tragedies that have really tugged at our heartstrings. And one of the things though you've always got to be careful about. I hate having to give this type of a conversation again. It just seems to happen all the time. Is even in times of desperate need for people who are at the edge of humanity and desperation, we've got individuals trying to take advantage of that situation and trying to take advantage of you and your good heart and your generous nature, and have now a tremendous number of disaster-related internet scams that are out and about. And I've gotten a few of the emails already. I know you've probably, if you're on Facebook, you've seen a few of them as well. The Twitters, of course, pour through as well. And it's just, it's an awful thing. The best recommendation, of course, for avoiding this sort of thing, and you can get these recommendations, a listing of them, from just about any source. McAfee's got a list on there. CNET, I know, has got one. CNN does have one as well that you can find on there. TechCrunch, I believe, ran a quick one a little while ago too. There's a lot of places to find how to avoid these scams. But I'm going to give you a couple of quick tips. The best one, I think, overall in general, is just never, and we tell you this all the time, never click through on a link that you get from some unsolicited source. It doesn't matter how legitimate it looks. If it's really the legitimate site, they're not going to care if you click through the link on your email or if you actually go to the website directly. It's going to be just as easy to make that donation and make sure that it goes to the right places. Donating to the big guys is certainly the easiest and safest option. If you have a special desire or connection to donate to some of the smaller organizations which are funding specific relief efforts, that's great too. Your church is a great place to go. They've typically done the legwork for you and vetted those organizations out. Check there. You can also check with the Better Business Bureau site or GuideStar. GuideStar is a fantastic site, and they're going to make this one of the cool sites of the week this week. GuideStar.org. If you go there, they will give you a breakdown on which charities and sources for donation are the best, not only legitimate, but also to what percentage of the money that you give actually goes to the relief effort and how much goes to administrative cost, things like this. There's a couple more as well. The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, USAID has valuable information about how to help victims in international disasters, of which this is one. Now, there's a couple of other quick tips too. One is, most of these websites are going to end in .org addresses if they're legitimate, and that's a charitable organization ending. Now, you can get .org websites without necessarily being an organization that's charitable in mind, but just be careful. That's one of your first tips. If you see it taking you to a .com, there's a good chance that it's not legitimate. Also, you really want to be very, very skeptical of people claiming to be individual survivors. That's generally not the way to go, unless you know them personally. And even then, you want to be a little bit careful. In times of tumult and turmoil, as is happening in Japan right now, there's a possibility people's email addresses and things like that and email accounts are being broken and hacked and then used to send out these desperation pleas for money. You verify that you're sending to the individual that you know and not to some other location. Don't ever feel pressured into giving a donation to anyone. Use credit cards also too. It's great because you can always, you have an upper limit. If you do find out that you've been scammed very quickly, you can put a cancel on that, and that'll help as well. With the Facebook I mentioned earlier too, be careful with the links that come through. There's a lot of links coming through right now. People saying, hey, have you seen this really interesting video of the tsunami? A lot of these, not a lot, but many of these anyways, are not legitimate links. They're not take you to a video. All they're going to do is take you to a page which is going to automatically send the same link out to all of your friends and perpetuate and propagate that link. And eventually those can be used to distribute malware, which helps nobody but the originator. So just be careful. Don't curtail your generous instincts. The people in Japan desperately need some help right now. The aid is very valuable to them, but look to some of these sources and take some of these tips to heart, and make sure that the money that you're spending actually goes to where you want it to go and actually goes to where it's going to be useful and not into some dirty rat's back pocket. So that's all I have to say on that matter. I could go on for another 45 minutes easily on the great disgust that fills me when I think about individuals taking advantage like that. Much as I am filled with great disgust with the New York Times today, for a bit of a segue, the New York Times, why would I be disgusted with the New York Times? I was just reading their newspaper, in fact, yesterday when I was out on the East Coast. Wonderful newspaper, fantastic. The website, filled with gobs of great information. The journalism is, outstanding. It's a world standard. So why would they spend 14 months and over $40 million to keep people out of that great content? It's basically what they've done. They've finally released the details of their paywall. Now, a paywall is what it's called when you need to pay something to get at content or information on a website that would otherwise be blocked to you. So essentially, it's like a subscription plan. However, New York Times, I mean, for one thing, come on, guys. How many times do you have to get beat over the head with the digital stick to say, gosh, newspapers are struggling. The paper stuff isn't working so well. We need to do something to make it valuable again and online. And the whole model of making people pay for information just isn't really working anymore before they get it. That, you know what? Making people pay for information online isn't working. But no, they didn't get that note. They didn't get that message. So instead what they did is they came up with one of the most baroque and confusing concepts for how to charge people to get through to their website that I've ever heard of. And this is not just me saying this because of my ignorance or inability to comprehend. This is being echoed by people that I'm reading all over the place. There's a fantastic article on Tech Dirt that very, very clearly echoes my own frustration and kind of consternation and just absolute confusion about what exactly are they doing. Here's just a little bit of why this is so confusing. Is to start with, just a regular person and not paying anything, you get 20 page views for free. Now, it's not 20 articles. It's 20 pages that you can look at. But you can also get around the paywall five times a day if you're coming in via a search, or also to, if you're reading a blog from the New York Times, well, then that's okay too. Or also if you come from a link from another site, which would link you to a New York Times story. So why am I, what am I paying for then? What's happening? Okay. So that's all ways you can go through. Oh, and also too, by the way, top news stories you can still get for free, sort of, kind of. And other stories that they choose might be free depending on what their selection is. So again, why am I paying? Now what am I paying for? Okay, so the paywall is $15 every 4 weeks, not every month, just every 4 solid weeks. Now you get access to whatever you want to, but only on a laptop, desktop or a smartphone, but specifically not on an iPad. Well, unless, of course, you're using a browser in your iPad, then I guess you could get by it with the page views, right? And then if you pay $5 more, then they'll take away the smartphone access, but you can get iPad access. So you're going to pay more and then lose something. But then if you pay even more than that for every 4 weeks, then you get the times on both the smartphone and the iPad, but you still have to see ads. And this, keep in mind, this is all introductory pricing. This is the low cost that you're never going to see again. That in a period of time here, you're going to be paying even more for this wonderful and so clear as mud paywall. So I've got friends in the newspaper industry, and it's not looking like a long-term investment portfolio thing you want in your portfolio right now. They're just none of the paper and print companies seem to be approaching the problem with the right degree of clarity about what is really going to make sense in this new environment. They're modeling the new technology on top of the old economic structures that they had in place in the organizations, the ads, the way that they sold the ads, the way that they value the product that they have and the information that they're presenting. And it's all wrong. It's just not going to work tomorrow. It's barely allowing them to scratch out an existence today, and even that is dissolving, particularly when it comes to selling ads. Print ads, insert ads, online ads are the only thing that's really increasing in value for the news industry, and a company as smart and as large as New York Times basically cutting people off from access to the ad revenue that they get is just outright idiocy. I don't know how to soft pedal this. It's just stupidity. Like I said, maybe I'm getting too passionate about this. It just drives me a little bit crazy. At any rate, I guess we can move on from that. I've gone on enough about that. In related somewhat news, though, on the good side of people really embracing the new culture that we have here, the AP, the Associated Press, wow, they've jumped to the fore. They've said that's it. We're breaking new ground. We've decided, yes, indeed, it is okay now for all of you who are out there writing articles today about technology, who are out there writing papers, perhaps, about email and smartphones and all this. You know what, guys? Drop the hyphen. It's okay. The AP gave their thumbs up today. They said they approved it for 2 p.m. or I'm sorry, 2 a.m. Yesterday that you can now stop using the hyphen in the word email. In addition, you no longer have to worry about cell phone and smartphone, whether those are supposed to be two words or one word. You know what? The AP says it's okay. Cell phone, smartphone, they're both okay with one word. So go for it. Think about the amount of ink that's going to be saved and rejoice. That's what I say. Good on you, AP. Thanks for giving us the thumbs up on that one. Much appreciated. I don't know where it's going to go from there, but hopefully this will just usher in a new era of clarity in our writing that we no longer have to break these things up. Thanks to the AP. In addition to clarity, I'm going to give one last informational article here for you before we jump in and start calling Jay up and see if we can get a hold of him. One more thing I want to tell you about that's going to increase clarity across the world as well is if you've been wondering, you know, how you can easily find all of those adult entertainment websites that you've been looking for, Icon has now approved, finally, the XXX top level domain. That's the .xxx domain as opposed to a .com that you typically would go to or .org. The Icon, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, they're the ones that basically distribute and approve all of the domain names for people. And they've said, you know what? We're going to give you www.triplex. So now, the icon says that this move will give consumers the reassurance that they are more protected from the risk of viruses, identity theft, credit card fraud, and inadvertent exposure to child abuse images. This is what Icon said Friday in a statement that they released that announced the decision to open this up. Now, there's some alternative views to it as well. You know, one thing that for sure, I just don't see any of the established adult sites giving up their current .com domains just because they have an option for a .XXX domain. Now, I'm sure they're going to branch into it for sure, but you're not going to be able to, you know, do the ideal situation, which would be to say, oh, I'm going to set up a block on my filter. Anything .XXX is going to be blocked, and therefore my children are safe from viewing any pornographic images. Just is not going to be the case. And of course, this is only for, there's not going to be a body that's going to kind of go through and say, hey, you're showing pornographic images. You have to use a .XXX as opposed to a .com or a .org or a .net or whatever it is that they've grabbed, or a .info, which you can get for, you know, pennies on the dollar practically. You know, it's just not going to it's not going to make it that easy. It's essentially just giving an easier way to find those sites if you are so inclined. Already, even though the release and information and news just came out on Friday, as I said, already, as of this morning, the ICM registry has already received over 200,000 .XXX domain reservations. So hop in on that. If you need one, now's the time. You're going to be short on sites if you don't move quickly. And hey, speaking on short on sites, short on time, why don't we give our good friend Jay a call? We always try to give him a little bit of a buzz about this time of day and see if we can get through. Now, he's got some good geek trivia for us this week, I know, because we had a really great question last week. Or I should say 2 weeks ago.
Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Garmin.
How's it going, Mr. Kassler?
It's going all right. It's going all right. I've been busy, as have you, but we're doing all right. And it's nice to see spring is in the air. The first robins have officially landed and are flitting about. So it's not too bad.
So the first Batman should not be far behind.
Good point. That's exactly right. in downtown Chicago, that's not necessarily a sight you don't see. So.
This is true. Actually, I believe a lot of The Dark Knight was shot in Chicago because Christopher Nolan likes your bridges that can raise up and down. They're very useful for his projects.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, great jumping scenes. Yes. Yeah. As a matter of fact, that is exactly right. The Dark Knight was filmed a great deal. It was filmed in the city of Chicago, especially Lower Wacker too, is a fantastic place for night scenes and very claustrophobic and creepy car chases and things, which was put to good effect there as well.
Yeah, and the Convention and Visitors Bureau in Chicago is going to thank you for this broadcast.
Everybody should come to Chicago. Chicago is a great town. Actually, I have no problems saying that I do like Chicago. I was in Times Square for St. Paddy's Day and walking around down there, and I love Manhattan too, but boy, there's just something a little more neighborly about Chicago. Manhattan's got a real kind of you know, cosmopolitan feel to it, absolutely, but there's something comfortable and familiar in Chicago that I don't think you get in a lot of other places.
I would agree with that. Also, you know, you guys do winter in ways I can't imagine. I always tell the story of when I visited Northwestern, where I almost went to school, and they're breaking us up into tour groups, and they're explaining exactly what the wind chill is like, because Northwestern sits on the lake, about how they have student groups that go around to make sure no one falls asleep outside for getting a little bit too inebriated, because very likely die.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of, wow, there's a whole organization devoted to making sure students don't freeze to death, because that's so likely so often, you need a student group to watch out for that.
Yeah.
That's cold.
Well, you know, at least, though, you've got to appreciate the fact that at least they didn't go so far as to create a student group to try to keep students from drinking too much. You know, that would have been doomed to failure.
They're still a Big Ten school. You can only go so far.
It's true. And it is true that every year, there, and this year was no exception, I know I saw at least, I want to say it was one, maybe just one this year, but there's always at least one or two articles about somebody who has a little bit too much to drink, and sure enough, the story I read this year was about a guy who had a fight with his wife, and got a little ripped, a little tipsy, more than a little tipsy, and went outside and sat outside on the back porch when it was probably about 5 degrees out, and in his boxers, and she found him the next morning. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's an exercise in bad decision making all around.
Yeah. I don't know where that starts and ends, but these things do happen. It is cold enough to definitely cause you some difficulties. Now, Louisville's, I mean, a bit warmer, but you guys get some chilly air down there as well.
We have cold bursts, but what we don't get is your just epic wind chill. We don't get the, yes, it's, you know, it's 22 with a wind chill of negative 11. Like, we don't get that level swing. You know, it's like it's 22 with a wind chill of 12. Like,
yeah.
we'll get that. You know, and maybe for like a week. You guys really double down on that. There's like some level of like Chicago pride of, yep, it's cold, it's windy, it's miserable, and we're not going to acknowledge it, but we drink to make the pain go away.
That's right. Well, and this, though, I got to tell you, Chicago is much easier to deal with winter-wise than Minneapolis when I was living there. And I spent most of my time growing up in Minneapolis. So coming to Chicago the first couple of years, it was I was really irritating people because I was like, this is great. This isn't a winter. You know, there's not 8 feet of snow on the side of the streets. This is crazy. So
this is true. I have friends who's in Rochester and friends who lived in Syracuse, and they're both like, yeah. You mean you measure snow in inches? How quaint.
Exactly. Yeah, how many inches of dusting did you get? You know, that's, it's what it comes down to.
You can still find your car. How sweet of you.
Yep. Yeah, the February snowstorms were kind of like a hometown to me. You know, it was like, wow, yeah, this is, I forgot about this. This is kind of nice. It's an actual winter now, you know, and people have to pay attention when they drive for a change. This is nice. Nobody's driving around here with power plugs sticking out of the front of their car. That's how you can tell we're in a warmer climate.
Ah, yes, the engine warmer.
Yep.
Well, and then when the municipal authorities had to figure out exactly what to do with the snow, it's like, we can't just plow it. We have to take it somewhere because there's no room to plow it anymore. They're like blocking like entrances to buildings.
Yep. Or in Minnesota, the intentionally create parking lots that are a good 20 spaces or more larger than they actually need, because in the way you've got to pile that snow up somewhere, and a lot of times it winds up right in the middle of the parking lot, taking up about 20 spaces and creating a giant mountain of snow, which lasts sometimes in well into April.
Yeah, it's not really spring until that's gone. Like that's the official start of spring in like Rochester and Syracuse is the parking lot icebergs have finally disappeared.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Although it is fun in late April to go and grab a couple of quick snowballs and throw them at some friends. You know, when it's warm.
Yeah, they're nice and gray at that point, right? It's like throwing pieces of chalkboard at someone.
Yeah, pretty much. And crumbly too, usually. So but still cold and they sting, so it's good fun. Good fun for everyone. Oh man. Well, Jay, I guess I gave you a hard time because I said finally the worm is on the other foot. The worm is turned. The shoe is on the other foot. Whichever way you want to put it, you had to ask me what the question was this week, which I constantly have that problem. And I actually knew what the question was this week. I was so excited too. It was about Douglas Adams and what music he picked for his show. Way back to the galaxy. Yeah.
When he first broadcast The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on BBC in 1978, BBC had a blanket musical license, so they could use any music they wanted as part of their license. They had to have separate licensing fees. So he got to choose a lot of rock music. Those who've heard sort of bootleg recordings of the original 1978 broadcast, which you can't buy really because of all the rights issues tied up and all the music they used, know that they had some Pink Floyd in it and a lot of other things. But the theme song has endured from every broadcast version of from radio to television to movies. The same theme song has been used in every version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that has been broadcast, just not the original version, because again, these are about rights issues. You can't use the original rock version of this from the original band. So the question was, who were the original composers of the theme to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? And most people don't know. It's the Eagles.
Oh.
From their album One of These Nights, they did an instrumental piece called Journey of the Sorcerer, which is kind of, eagly and strange, and it's got a banjo in it, which is why Douglas Adams liked it, because, he thought banjos, roadside weirdos, hitchhikers, okay,
sure,
we'll go with this. It's very, and so the Eagles, Journey of the Sorcerer, is the official theme song of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The reason nobody realizes this is that after that first broadcast on the BBC, when they wanted to release CDs or tapes or anything, and incidentally, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is the first CD released ever on the BBC radio collection. It was the first CD the BBC ever released, was the recordings of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. They had to re-record it using other musicians. They could buy the rights to the sheet music, but they couldn't use the Eagles version. So Bernie Leadon and Tim Schuster and a whole bunch of other people have re-recorded it, and it's appeared on everything, up to including the Hollywood film. They used versions of this song as the theme to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Huh. Oh, man. Man, I never would have guessed Eagles. And I've heard the theme song in various versions, but I wonder if even people that are steeped in the Eagles, that really love the Eagles, if they would have recognized it with all the variation that occurred to it. I have heard the some of the radio version. I've heard some of the bootleg stuff, but then also too, I've heard some of the redone ones. NPR was playing it for a while. It was probably like 10 years ago at this point, but they had redone it and reworked it. The radio versions of the Hitchhiker's Guide actually is it really translates quite well to a radio play. I was surprised listening to it. It does well as a radio play. It does very well as an audiobook too.
Yes, well, I mean, bear in mind that the real play came first. So it was conceived as a radio play that then he reluctantly turned into a book.
I did not.
Or a series of books.
I did not realize that. I had no idea.
It originated as a radio play.
Ah, wow. Well, that makes a lot of sense then, why it would work quite so well as a radio play. I had no idea. Yeah, no, it it does. It does work very well. And the book itself, I mean, you can tell it's very terse, it's very tight, and it's very pithily written. There's a little bit of exegesis thrown in, of course, all throughout it in Adams' style. But the plot, it just keeps rolling and rolling, and it's a relatively short read too. I had forgotten how brief it was until I recently actually gave my son the complete Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which includes four of the books, and the first three, and then the fourth one was
So Long and Thanks for All the Fish.
Exactly. And he's actually he loved it. He loved the first one. I haven't gotten him onto the second one yet, but he just devoured the first section, and I think probably understood maybe a good third or more of the humor. So that's not too bad. That's not too bad for an 11, 12-year-old.
Exactly. Well, I mean, Douglas Adams, bear in mind, discussed previously, is one of only two people who are not members of Monty Python to ever be credited as writing episodes of Monty Python's Flying Circus. He's a rare witticist, or was, the late Douglas Adams. So, just a turn of phrase is his thing. And that's also why I think you can't ever do a version of Hitchhiker's Guide without a narrator. because that's where at least 25% of the humor comes from, is the narrator just making observations about these absurd characters.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And bringing your attention to things that are going on. And his influences, of course, is still felt through a lot of the work. I mean, you know, Terry Pratchett is another British author and satirist who, you know, you read some of that at the same time you're reading Douglas Adams, and it's almost confusing as to you know, who's writing here. Some of the same techniques and some of the same processes. So
absolutely. Well, and Pratchett is in that rare witty field up there with Douglas Adams. There's not too many guys like them.
No. Nope.
And we get fewer of them all the time. No offense to Ewan Colfer, who tried to finish like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I appreciate him doing it. For the sake of the family, please don't do it again.
Yeah, no, I, and you can still get those books as well. In the you know, they're sitting right next to the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and it just feels wrong when I see them there. It's like, you know, come on, it needed to have ended. And the whole Dirk Gently stuff too. I feel kind of badly when I see that there, because I'm always worried. You know, it's silly, but I get worried. I'm like, someone's gonna pick that up and think that's representative, you know, and then they're not going to read the really good stuff. You know, leave the Dirk Gently Holistic Guide and, you know, all this stuff. Don't touch that, at least not till later, not till you appreciate what went before, what was really good. And then you'll be willing to slog through the really rough bits that are in there.
Exactly. That's like saying, I want to learn Tolkien, I'm going to start with the Silmarillion. Like, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly.
Tolkien presents enough of his own challenges. Don't start with basically his published background notes. That's not. That's like reading the footnotes before reading the story. Don't do that.
Exactly. And yeah, it's like the anti-cliff notes too. It's the littlest things made as large as possible and as boring as possible before.
Trees and grass and trees and grass and trees.
Yep. Yeah. I have to confess, I never actually finished the Silmarillion. I remember picking it up and excited, this big, huge tome to continue the story. I was thinking at the time, I was fairly young, and no, it was nothing of the sort. And quickly realized that after about 150 pages or so. So, well, at any rate, what should we be thinking on for this coming week?
Well, we're coming up on the 27th anniversary of Mariner 10's flyby of Mercury. It's still the only spacecraft ever made that has done passes of Mercury. It's the only one. Mariner 10 is just one of those spacecraft that just has all kinds of records in the space flight historical annals that no one ever thinks about. So besides just being, you know, the first, you know, one, first and only one to ever take passes of Mercury, it remains the inaugurator of two different types of, we'll call them propulsion or navigational systems on a spacecraft. So what are the two types of spacecraft propulsion that Mariner 10 was the first spacecraft to use?
Oh, man, that is a great question. Wow. It is really good timing too, because they've got just today or yesterday, I was seeing an article, I believe it was on MSNBC maybe, that I was talking about how one of the probes is now speeding past or towards Pluto. It got past the orbit of Uranus just the past couple of days. So
it is approaching the planet formerly known as Pluto.
Yes.
Or Pluto formerly known as
the planet. Yeah. Precisely. So that's as always very timely. That's a really interesting question. And propulsion systems in general, of course, when you're talking about long distance travel, are always fascinating. There's, you know, it's such a difficult thought process. It's not just, well, just keep burning things until we get there. You know, it never quite works out that way.
Yeah, there's a thrust to weight ratio that any good aeronautical engineer will discuss how complicated that is. The more fuel you bring, the further you go, the more fuel you have to burn, which means the more fuel you have to bring, and on and on and on it goes.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't it doesn't end well when you try to run those calculations with the at least not with chemical fuel rockets and other methods like that. So, well, awesome, awesome. You know, Jay, I'm going to let you get back to enjoying your hopefully warm spring day here, almost spring anyways. Did you get up to any shenanigans for St. Patrick's Day, I should ask?
I did not. I was. It's basketball time down here in the Bluegrass State. So the fact that it was St. Patrick's Day was barely a blip on the radar out here. It's bracket season.
Ah, yes. Basketball. It just. I know you're a big sports guy. I've got my niche. I like my NFL, and that's pretty much about it. I'll occasionally watch some golf, basketball. I just can't, especially when it gets down into the college basketball stuff. I just can't. I don't know enough for it to hold my attention.
Now, that's not a crime. I mean, it does make you less of a person, but it's not a crime.
I realize that in many people's eyes it does. And the funny thing is, of course, I'm going to Vegas. I'm leaving for Vegas tomorrow. And we had no idea when we were setting up this trip that it was right in the heart of March Madness. But it managed at least to get out there prior to the really important games. So we're hoping that it's not insanely busy yet with sports bettors that are out there, and we could do at some other time a whole other show on the kind of inanity of restricting sports betting to only Nevada, and I think like one or two other states have some limited regions where you can do it, when in reality everyone is betting on sports all the time.
It's like the quote from The Big Lebowski, you know, hey, you want a toe? I can get you a toe by 2 o'clock. And like, you want to place a bet? I can get you a bet placed by 2 o'clock no matter where you live.
Yep. Yep. Well, and these days, I mean, they've got iPad apps or iPhone apps for it. You know, you really can't stop it. I guess, like I said, we could do a whole other show about that. And maybe one of these days we will. Well, Jay, I'm going to let you go. Thanks, as always, for helping me fill the time with a little bit of intelligence and wit that a lot of intelligence and wit that would not be here without you. And we'll be thinking about propulsion systems for next week.
All right. You take it easy, buddy.
All right. Take care, Jay. Thanks. Goodbye. Man, always fun. Always fun to hear from Jay. JayGarman.net. You can check that out. What a great guy. You know, and one thing we didn't talk about this week, I'll talk with him about it next week. I actually signed up for a Backupify account. I'm not getting any green for this, any grease for this. The station isn't either, so I'm not going to go on about it too much. But really, really great app. Anyways, you can get a free account. That's the reason why I want to tell you about it, backupify.com. I've been using it just to backups your Gmail account. Pretty cool stuff. Anyways, the reason I mention it along with Jay is that Jay actually does that kind of stuff. So he's involved with them and doing some of their marketing things. So anyways, it is time, though, now to actually switch into some sponsors. And those are people that are helping out the station. You know, you can be someone who helps out the station if you would like to as well. You can donate to us by going to our website, wrlr.fm. I'm going to play you some information on that in just a second, but I want to tell you personally, too, it makes a difference to the station. We are a nonprofit. We do not make money off of advertisements or any other form of sales that you would typically use to bolster the economy of a radio station like WRLR. We're community-based, we are volunteer-run, and we love it, and we want to stick around. So if you have an opportunity and you've got a couple of extra dollars, I really highly suggest you go to WRLR.fm and take a look at the ways that you can donate a little bit of cash to keep us going. And speaking of that, I'm going to switch us over to a couple of little notes and messages that you'll want to listen carefully to, and we'll be back in just a bit. Stay tuned, and thanks for listening. You are listening right now to Tech Talk on WRLR.
WRLR, Round Lake Heights, Illinois. 98.3 FM.
As you may know, WRLR is a nonprofit, all-volunteer station. All of us here give our time, resources, and energy to provide the community, and the world for that matter, with unparalleled entertainment and information. Our motto, radioactive means involvement, our involvement alone isn't enough. There are costs that go well beyond our immediate resources. We need you. Community involvement is everyone's involvement. Please go to our webpage, wrlr.fm, and click on donate. The rest is easy. The amount is up to you. Our budget is like yours. Every contribution is an important part of keeping us all radioactive.
The Law Office of Gary N. Foley, located in Round Lake Beach, is a proud sponsor of WRLR and is there for all your legal needs. Gary N. Foley can help with bankruptcies, real estate, estate planning, and traffic law. The office is located at 1919 Route 83 in Round Lake Beach. The phone number is 847-986-2999. Their website is www.garyfoleylaw.com. And email is garyfoley@hotmail.com.
This Morning with Georgia Lee is made possible in part by the following sponsor.
Welcome home to Bakes Restaurant, located on Route 45, 1/2 mile south of CLC, near Center Street. Featuring soups, pizza, sandwiches, Italian dishes, and seafood daily. Full sports and news programming available on their 18 HD TVs. Wi-Fi also available. Bakes is open 7 days a week to serve you. Their phone number is 847-223-3430. Bakes Restaurant, for over 21 years, your home away from home.
Had enough of living month to month, paycheck to paycheck, with little hope of ever getting ahead? No matter what your age or income level, tune in to the Sherry Depp Freedom Show with your host, Sherry Ridge, every Wednesday at 10 a.m. right here on 98.3 FM, WRLR.
All right, we're back. Gotta love that. You know, that's a little something that that we in the radio biz like to call dead air. So, and something that we typically like to avoid. We're back, though, or I'm back anyways. I wish it was a we. As I said, our good friend Dave Sparky Saganaki is off with his close companion. I like to refer to her, call her Yoko these days. And I know Dave gets it and takes it in the kind-hearted and fun spirit that it's meant. And we do miss him. We do miss him desperately, dearly. Dave, wishing you good, safe travels, and looking forward to when you come back. Anyways, I got a couple of quick little things that I wanted to mention to people just because I think it's important before we get on to our cool sites of the week and then the podcast-only song of the week as well. First off is if you are a Microsoft Office user and you're using Microsoft Office prior to Office 2010, you want to be a little bit careful these days. It turns out Microsoft is sent out a notification and information about a Flash Player attacks that are being bundled in Excel 2007 and older documents. Now, I was kind of surprised to see that, you know, typically 2007 and 2010, the file types are close enough that you would think that, and it came after the change in file type that they made, that you would think that it wouldn't be something that would cross those versions, but indeed it does. The version of Office 2007 is susceptible because that version does not have data execution protection enabled by default, and these current attacks don't bypass data execution prevention, also known as DEP, and they have a protected view that automatically starts up when you start up your Excel spreadsheet. So there is a way around it. It's not easy. It's not clean and swift to do if you're not pretty much involved in it. You can look up on Microsoft's site and find it. But basically, what you're going to want to do is if you're using Office version prior to 2010, you need to get the Enhanced Mitigation Experience Toolkit. The EMET, that will help you. And that that along with the Microsoft Security Response Center information will allow you to kind of remove or mitigate or reduce anyways the risk that you would get from these flash bombs that are coming off in your Excel spreadsheet. So just something that I wanted people to be at least a little bit aware of. Another thing to be aware of as well, I mentioned Japan earlier, and I got to tell you, you know, there's probably not a lot of danger from the threat of radiation in the U.S. However, and I'm sure you've been hearing a lot about that, however, there is a danger that your smartphones, that your TVs, that your computer monitors, anything that uses LCD equipment and component could become quite a bit more expensive, or at least somewhat more expensive in the coming months. That's because a lot of the production of components that make up those pieces of technology are being hampered. In fact, some of the plants are being shut down right now. They could be shut down for a month or more. And that's going to include also, too, some other parts outside of the technology industry, including some car parts, semiconductors, and all this. It's really going to impact, something like this, a single incident, it's going to impact global supply chains. It really will. So it's a good time to, you know, I don't know if I'd say you should hoard your LCD TVs and monitors, but you might want to think about picking one up sooner rather than later. I doubt that the prices are going to get cheaper in the coming months as these global supply chain issues become more prevalent and become pronounced throughout the world as in a ripple effect. And at that, you know, I believe what we've got to talk about. Oh, yeah. We do need to hustle right along. And everybody knows what that sound means. What that music is all about is our cool sights of the week this week. And as always, I'm always excited. I've got a ton of them. You know, trying to pick out which ones I really want you to hear about and know about is always so tough. You know, one thing I want to talk about, we just kind of railed on Microsoft, right? So I got to back that. I got to take that a step back. And I'll tell you something good that Microsoft does too. Google Cloud Connect for Microsoft Office. Oh, this is awesome. Now, you may be like me. You've got already a Google account. You've got Gmail. You've got Google Voice. You've got all that stuff. In fact, I should tell people, if you want to connect, don't be afraid to be social. 847-984-0847. Leave me a voicemail message. I'd love to hear your cool sites of the week and get those on there. Or techtalk@wrlr.fm always works as well, too. But Google Cloud Connect. Now, this thing is just cool. Google Cloud Connect for Microsoft Office allows you to integrate Google into Microsoft Office applications, and it improves, it adds a whole ton of stuff for a team environment. It allows you to add simultaneous collaboration. You can do updates, and it'll keep your revision history. It syncs everything up into your Google Docs accounts. Also, too, gives you unique URLs for every document, so you can provide people, even outside of those ones that are allowed to edit it, with the ability to go in and view them. Now, if you're using Google Docs already for editing, that's fine. And then maybe you don't use Microsoft Office for this purpose. But if you're using kind of a combination like I am, this is just awesome. And you're going to want to go to googledocs.blogspot.com. You'll see the article right there. I'll give you a link directly to it on our website, techtalk.wrlr.fm. But of course, you can find that there. Really, really good stuff. Now, here's another one I want to give you as well. I love being able to show people what I'm doing. When I need to help someone out, it's so much easier to send them a picture than it is to try to paint them one with my voice, even though that's what you're listening to right now. And you probably realize that if you've listened to me for any length of time. But at any rate, how can you do that easily? You know, you can do the whole control shift print screen, go into paint, paste it, edit it, change it, copy, try to copy it back. Doesn't work. Screenshots are so valuable to have and so great to be able to produce, and especially to be able to produce good looking ones, ones that really get the message across. And they can be used for more than just training situations. They can be used to show off something that you've done on your computer. They can be used as a background for your blog. All sorts of things. Really good stuff. One of the best ones that I've found that's free is called ScreenPresso. And you can download ScreenPresso for free at ScreenPresso.com. Now, they do have a ScreenPresso Pro. I haven't found a need to use ScreenPresso Pro yet. I've been in the ScreenPresso free for quite some time, and it's fantastic. It'll let you resize images. The effects that allows you to add are great with drop shadows and rounded corners and reflections, all this great stuff, all the things you'd want to do. You can select, of course, with a lot of these screenshot things, one of the major features of them is that you, when you hit the print screen button, you don't just take a shot of the entire screen. You can choose to take a shot of just a rectangular portion that you define, of a window that you have open, of even one of the toolbars, if you want to take that, and then that'll automatically come out into their image editor where you can do all the other good, wonderful stuff that you want to. The other thing, too, which is really neat, is maybe you're working on a laptop screen or even a netbook screen, and you want to give somebody an image of a website which is a little bit too big for the screen, or you've got so many blasted, you know, toolbar things on the top that you can only see three quarters of it, there's a way you can actually capture the scroll of the web page and make it all into a single image, and I'll do that for you automatically. ScreenPresso.com, that's my other cool site of the week. You know, I had lined up for our podcast only song of the week, something pretty cool. I'm going to put back, based upon Jay's answer to the geek trivia question of the week, we're going to listen to the Eagles' Journey of the Sorcerer, the original from One of These Nights. And boy, thank you so much for sticking around. Thanks for listening to us. This has been Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM, Round Lake Heights, Illinois. Don't forget to tune in next week. We are going to have some great guests on. I'm trying to remember, make sure I get the name right. Robert Wesley from Next Worth is going to be on talking to us about how you can trade in some of that equipment that you just don't need anymore. So come on back. Thanks for listening. Have a great week, everyone. You've been listening to Tech Talk on WRLR. And this is Journey of the Sorcerer by the Eagles.